Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. Happy to be here with you for another week. It's me, Vivek Patel, and my colleague, Sujai Johnston. In today's episode, Sujai is going to talk about why it's never too late to begin your gentle parenting journey. It's never too late to change. It's never too late to start your healing process. And then I'm going to talk about wrongness and how if we can get rid of wrongness from our interactions with our kids and with ourselves, it completely changes the way we parent and the way we feel about ourselves. And now let's give a listen to Sujai.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the call. You know, I want to talk today a little bit about healing after we have engaged in punitive parenting styles. You know, gentle parenting is outside of the norm, and a lot of us probably didn't come across it, you know, by default or naturally. It's something that we sought out, and we're doing things a lot different than the mainstream, and therefore a good portion of us parented less than gently in the beginning, myself included. It wasn't until my first two children were quite a bit older before I began my gentle parenting journey and got my education and really learned how to do this and to put it into application. And I feel like it's also one of the reasons why it's easy for me to talk about this and hold everybody else in empathy and understanding as well, because, you know, I've been there, done that, and I'm as human as anybody else and have made my whole pile of mistakes. And not only that, you know, in my family, explosiveness was definitely the default, you know, growing up around my dad and my mom. And there wasn't a lot of clear defined rules. It was just sometimes you'd step on toes and they'd become quite explosive. I parented much the same way in the beginning. You know, I was an early life attachment parent by most definitions of what that means. And then as free will set in, that explosiveness that my parents exhibited was something that I also had, you know, and it was something really deep in my heart that I wanted to change. And that's when I got online and started learning about other parenting styles. That was when I put a name to attachment parenting and really understood that better and learned a lot about attachment parenting. And it led to kind of the beginning of the concepts of gentle parenting and what it is today. And I know it can feel like, you know, and I'm sure we have in our own ways, we've really messed up and we've made mistakes. We've done things that are out of alignment with our own selves. And we would really like to change that. And when we go to change it, what we discover is not only are we, you know, finely tuned to respond in the ways we've been responding, but also our relationships are set up with a lot of different biases and prejudices and preconceived notions. And it's really hard to break those back down after we've set that all up. However, people often question me. They come to me and they ask, you know, my kids are this age and this age. Is it too late? Is it too late to be gentle? Are my children broken? I want to encourage everybody who's wondering and feeling this to know it's never too late to heal. It's never too late to engage in the healing processes. It's never too late to put the relationship first and work with the people in our lives. And, you know, the very idea that humans get broken is very harmful. You know, I think it's really tied into a very mainstream idea about how humans are and how we think and how we operate. We certainly have things that happen to us that become part of our nervous system. They become part of our genetic makeup. They become part of who we are. And it's never too late to change that. It's never too late to turn it around. And it's never too late to heal. And, you know, if you're coming from a more punitive parenting style, if you're coming from a lot of hardship, or perhaps you have a partner who doesn't gentle parent with you, and there's a lot of explosiveness in your home and things like that, it can feel like, you know, it's a a lost cause and a losing battle. And I want to encourage you to look at it a little bit differently. Look at it like, you know, we're from the society that's very punitive, and it's very centered in manipulation and control, and a lot of really toxic type of relational patterns. And when we can take a step back and look at that picture, that really big picture of all the things that, you know, the way that we're acting and responding and the way that we're interacting with our loved ones is tied into a lot of these older thought patterns that may not be helpful or useful. And when we really take a look at it, we'll notice that instead of seeing things, you know, such as a behavior being a problem, we can look at it from different perspectives and points of views. You know, when we see somebody having a problem, we're predisposed to help. And when we see somebody causing a problem, we're predisposed to shut that problem down. And if you're coming from a more punitive background, and you have decided that gentle parenting is for you, I would guess that there's a lot of healing that needs to happen within your family, you know, and there's layers and levels to that healing. We have to heal from any trauma that might be either occurring now or have occurred ongoing in the past. You know, we have to create safe spaces. We have to lean into really working on creating an environment where everybody feels safe and secure for the kind of healing from like explosive traumas and things like that. And then there's the relational healing that we need to do. And the relational healing can be quite difficult because we've already set up, you know, years of a relationship with somebody with our predisposed prejudices and biases and our ideas about how said situation is going to go. And we really need to break down those biases and those ideas before we can engage in some of the healthier relational tools. And we need to learn how to do the healthier relational tools because we also weren't taught those from the beginning. So really it's a process of peeling off the layers, understanding where you are now, understanding what it took to get to where you are now, and seeing how, and again, you know, I'm going to go back here every time when we're talking about in the beginning, just take a look at everything and see how it aligns with your values. How does, you know, everything that occurs in your life, how are you living your life in a way, and how much of the things that are occurring in your life are in alignment with your values, and how many of those things are causing you massive stress and pressure. And as we go through the process, we really begin to learn a lot about ourselves, and we can unpack the unuseful ideas, and we can learn the healthy relational tools. And I also want to note that if you've gotten here, if you've been through a hard time, and you know, there's a lot of factors that probably got you there. And some of them could be related to internal struggles that you have or internal struggles that your child has or your spouse or loved ones in your life. And, you know, really taking a look and knowing who we are and understanding our own internal struggles so that we can find the tools for them and find the extra help and support that we need. This is a really long, hard journey. And there'll be many times along this journey where you can walk the path alone. And there'll be many times along this journey where it'll be really helpful to have somebody to hold your hand, somebody to lean on, you know, finding a professional in some area, whether that's a therapist or a coach or whatever it is, finding support along the way and like-minded people that help us, and the encouragement to know that it's never too late, and nobody, you're not broken, and you haven't broken your children. You know, it may be an uphill battle. There may be a lot of work to do. There might be a lot of self-discovery to do, but you are not broken, and your children are not broken, and you will get through this, whatever it is, you know. And in the moments when you can walk alone and you know, you've got a lot of direction and figuring out your own healing and your own ideas and leaning into some resources, free resources and stuff. That's amazing. And in the moments when you need support, you know, that's also very, very, very valid. We live in a very punitive world, and a lot of people really look down their noses and say a lot of really harmful things and hurtful things about the work that we're doing, and they disregard and discard the things that we're doing here. And just having an empathetic ear that can understand what you're going through can be such a big piece of the journey in helping you find your own healing so that you can lean into the healing with your children and have the kinds of relationships with your loved ones, you know, not just your children, but with your loved ones and with yourself that you really deserve. That, you know, living in a life where there's constant contention and toxicity and even, you know, possibility for explosion, that becomes part of our nervous system. It becomes part of the way that we feel, you know, we're constantly trying to feel energies to make sure everybody's safe. And it's very hard to live on the edge like that. It's a very huge precursor to anxiety and all kinds of other really difficult struggles. So working on creating an environment where things are as peaceful as we can possibly get them, working on resetting our own responses and working on those relational tools and leaning into the healing can happen for sure. And there's never a time when you should look at your life and think, my goodness, I've messed up and it's just too late, you know. And Vivek and I are definitely here for all of you through this process. And we've got whole big boxes of toolboxes to help everybody through as well.
Welcome to the call, everybody. I'm glad to be here for another Monday after being away in Atlanta for a week, sharing conscious parenting, gentle parenting stuff with people over there. It was a really wonderful experience. I feel like I managed to share things in a way that really touched a lot of people. And it felt really good to have that experience. And, you know, being in Atlanta, it's Georgia, and I was kind of outside the main city. And so I was in a bit more of a, shall we say, conservative area. I know the organizers were a little bit nervous about how people would receive me because I'm so, you know, radical. And there's a lot of more punishment and control and authority and spanking in the mindset over there. I got a message from one of the organizers a couple of days after the symposium where I gave my keynote speech. But one of the people that was at the symposium and heard my speech, they were a committed spanker. And it was, you know, everybody was a little nervous what this person was going to be like. And they were thinking, oh, they're just going to get up and walk out in the middle of the speech. And they're going to feel like, you know, criticized and whatever. And then I got a message from the organizer a couple of days after the symposium saying that this parent who everybody was worried about, for the first time ever on their Facebook page, posted a gentle parenting meme. So obviously, whatever I said and the way I said it touched them in a way that they were open to the idea and got them thinking about it, you know, and I was like so pleased with that experience and felt like, you know, even if that one person, I planted a seed, it would make a big difference. But I think I planted a lot of seeds, so to speak, while I was over there. And so that feels really good. And it's certainly what I live for, because this, you know, all this stuff is so super challenging. You know, one of my old sayings is the seed you plant determines the tree you grow. And I just found that tweet. I tweeted that from like 2014, which is what, 7 years ago now. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, something has been on my mind is the idea of wrongness. I want to talk about wrongness a little bit. Just now in the Zoom call, I took a moment of like silence when we were just waiting to officially start after I kind of welcomed people. And Shivani had stepped away for a moment from her computer. And when she came back, it was quiet and she wasn't sure, oh, is my sound broken? Is the Vake's microphone off? Is it an intentional silence. And so she checked, said, is there any sound right now? Are you saying anything? And of course I was just sitting quiet. But it was kind of funny because, you know, like when you just walk in and there's like that silence, all of a sudden you don't know what the cause is and you need to figure out the cause. A lot of the time what happens is in moments like that, when we don't know what's happening exactly, we don't know why something's happening, we make up a story in our head about it before we actually figure out what it is. And sometimes we can be informed enough to know what, you know, it's like that story might have a certain amount of accuracy and relevance, but a lot of time it doesn't. A lot of the time it comes from fear. A lot of the time it comes from catastrophizing. A lot of the time it comes from projecting experiences we've had in other areas on, you know, like other relationships. It can really cause us to come from a place of fear and judgment and wrongness, you know, instead of what we can do, especially in relationships where there's a certain amount of trust built, is like Shivani did, is just check, hey, is there silence right now, or is the microphone not working, or what's going on? And I think we can do that relationally too. It's harder to do that with our kids sometimes because a lot of the time the young ones don't have the words for it. Kids usually in some level, they know what's happening to them and why, but they don't necessarily have the words for putting it all together and for dissecting all the different causes. You know, like me, after all the work I've done and after all the study I've done over the last, you know, few decades, I can usually piece apart what's happening to me. I can say, oh, there's kind of like this is like coming from my past, and this is actually like valid evaluation of the present and what's happening, and this is some projection, and this is accurate perception. And I can kind of separate those things out. And then the part that's like from my past and my pain, I can give empathy to, and I can really listen to that part, and I can hold that part. And the part that's got more of an accurate perception of the present, then I can figure out how I want to work with that. And do I need more communication? Do I need to set a boundary, you know, with adults, I mean, and, you know, or do I need to change the way I'm interacting with the situation? So like I have more of that capacity than I did, you know, even than I did a year ago, honestly, but also than 20 years ago. And certainly when I was a kid. And so kids can't do that in the same way. And so at least in the same way, that is an accurate saying, in the same way that I do. And so they may have their own ways of doing it, but that's the thing, right? Their ways of engaging with that stuff is often quite different from ours. And so then a lot of the time parents are at a loss. Why is my kid doing this? And when we experience that difference, we can tend to sometimes perceive things through a lens of wrongness, especially if our kids aren't hearing us, they're not listening to us. And if the things that they're doing that are, you know, that we're struggling to understand includes things that are painful for us, emotionally painful, physically painful, often both. And painful for other people too, you know, like if they're hurting other adults or hurting other kids, then it's really hard for us because then we have all of our stuff, all of our reactions come up. And then we're trying to also help our kids through their stuff and their reactions. And it's a whole complicated mess, really, in a way. It can be a whole complicated mess. And one of the things that happens when we get into that kind of a situation is we can often default into wrongness, especially where that pain comes up, where there's frustration and pain and a sense of loss of how to deal with the situation. We end up defaulting to wrongness, even though we don't see it. Even though sometimes it happens, a lot of the time it happens just like unconsciously, and it can be quite invisible to us. Sometimes it masquerades as righteousness, you know. Thing about wrongness is it always works against us with kids. It always works against us. And I know that it's really challenging though, you know, because like I said, we have so many layers of our own stuff that's coming up. And then if your kid is hitting you, it can activate a whole lot of stuff inside of us, which makes it hard to avoid the wrongness. Especially like, you know, like there are some 6-year-olds who are big and strong. So it feels like an adult
amount of force is coming. And then if we can't communicate that with them in the way that makes sense to us, it's the whole thing is a big challenge. And there's really no magic solution to something like that. There's no just do this and then everything will be okay kind of thing, because each person is a little different and each situation is a little different. And even on the same day, a person can be different in the morning and then different in the afternoon and then different in the evening, us included, right? But there are principles that we can work with, which really help guide us in the moment and figure out what to do. And so one of the big ones is no wrongness. And no wrongness is a challenge, but it's a challenge well worth undertaking. And so I want to just talk a little bit about that and why it's helpful and how we can work with it. So one of the things is that when we tell a kid, when you hit, it hurts, for example, when you hit, it hurts me, or when you hit, it hurts your sibling, or when you hit, it hurts the dog, right? A lot of the time, a high percentage of the time, kids respond by either by laughing or smiling and then staring the parent in the eye, just doing it again.
When we try and teach our kids empathy by asking them, how would you feel if that happened to you?
It very rarely has the impact that we're hoping for. I'm qualifying this by saying, I'm not saying we're doing this intentionally. Having said that, when we say, how would you feel, or this hurts, the idea behind it is that the kid is going to feel bad for hurting the person that they care about and therefore want to stop doing it. That's the idea behind it. And so the thing is, when we say it, what we're saying is, you know, there's wrongness around. There's wrongness, and you should want to avoid the wrongness because you don't want to hurt people. So we're projecting, unintentionally projecting wrongness onto our kids when we say that, even if it's accurate, right? Even if it's accurate that it is hurting, and it's accurate that, you know, even if the kid actually doesn't want to hurt, the wrongness makes it very hard to hear that message. Because the wrongness makes us go into a defense mode. And that's where that laughter comes from. It's so common, I just call it the laugh now. I'm like, oh, there's the laugh. And I see kids do it. I hear it so often. And it's really challenging, because then we're like, well, if I can't get to their empathy, then what am I going to do? And so this is the thing, though, that we think in our desperation to shift the pattern, that wrongness is going to have that effect. This kid was receiving that little bit of wrongness, and the parent had no idea that that's what was happening, and it was causing them to like keep going in that pattern. It's almost like, well, you think it's wrongness, but I need to not be wrongness, so I'm going to keep doing it and surround myself with a feeling that it's not wrong. Even if they feel it's wrong and they get that it's wrong, they have to defend that no wrongness inside of them, and it makes them want to do it more. It's not a quick thing. It's not an easy thing to let go of wrongness when you're one of your kids is hurting the other, because the instinct to protect the kid that's being hurt is so strong, you know. And then we also unconsciously, we put ourselves into that position. If we have that experience, we put ourselves into that position as our own inner child, and we feel it in our system. We feel it viscerally a lot of the time, you know. And then our sense of justice and wanting to defend those who are vulnerable comes up as well. And so like there's so many layers to our experience that brings up the feeling of wrongness. So it requires a great amount of consciousness to see the kid who's doing the hit without that lens of wrongness, you know, as much as the kid who's being hit. Which is really strange to say, right? It's really strange to think, how can that be equal? How can it be the same? And this is the mindset that I strive for, because when I'm able to intervene in the middle of a situation like that, where the kids are struggling, and I'm able to approach it from that place of no wrongness, all of a sudden I become someone that they don't have to protect themselves from, at least in that, once they really get that feeling of the no wrongness from me. And I've had that experience with so many kids in so many situations, in so many family different kinds of family makeups, you know, and I have found that the more we're able to approach our kids from that sense that they really are doing their best, and they really are, you know, they're doing some kind of deep process to meet some kind of need of some sort, to work out some kind of emotions of some sort. The more that we can help them feel that, we see that, the more they're going to be open to us helping them with it. And this is what I call, and you've probably heard me talk about it, this is what I call iceberg consciousness. The second part of it is the iceberg consciousness. And iceberg consciousness is where we see the top of the iceberg, but we know most of it is underneath. Last time I talked about iceberg consciousness, somebody posted in the comments that you can actually get iceberg-shaped ice cube trays. As you can actually have a little iceberg in your glass of water, and you can actually see how much of it is sticking out. But I mean, even if you just put an ice cube in, you can see most of the ice, even though it floats, most of the ice cube is under the water, right? So iceberg consciousness is where we recognize the behavior that we're seeing is just the visible. And then there's all this stuff underneath, the invisible stuff underneath, that when we tune into it, we have this whole other picture of what's happening. And usually when we are really centered in our iceberg consciousness, it's much easier for us to avoid the wrongness in our responses, even the subtle unconscious wrongness. The more we can see those subtle unconscious wrongnesses, the more we're able to approach our kids without them, and the more effectiveness that we have in reaching them. Because of course, we do want to shift those behaviors. It's not like we don't want to shift the behavior. We just want to do it in a way that's like effective and isn't going to cause our kids to resist us, you know? And that's really what it's about. It's not like there are a lot of the behaviors with our kids. I'm always like, let them do it, let them figure it out. Even if it's chaotic and difficult, even if, you know, it's challenging, whatever. But there are some patterns that we really do want to shift, and certainly physical violence is one of them. Tuning into the relational, emotional, sensory, environmental needs and causes and contributors to whatever that behavior is, and then approaching it from that perspective in the moment, without the wrongness, can have such a big impact, you know? So instead of saying, you know, we don't hit or hitting hurts, we say, my goodness, this is a hard moment for you, you know? And I just really, I love you so much, and I'm here for you. I want to help you through this, you know, and something like that. And of course, some kids just don't like that. And I know that some parents say, oh, I tried that with Bacon, it didn't work, but that is something that we can get better at as we learn to really tune into where our kids are at, and help them feel that we're really there for them and really see them in their struggle. Sometimes kids can sense that we're doing it because, you know, like we're trying to manipulate them, which we kind of are, you know, because we don't want them to keep hitting. But that's where the practice of being able to really be present in that moment without the thought that I'm saying this because I'm trying to get you to stop hitting, which is part of the mental discipline that we do. So they're not feeling like I'm doing it to try and get them to stop hitting, even though I'm doing it to try and get them to stop hitting. I don't want to come across that way in the moment. I want that empathetic, connecting, need meeting, iceberg consciousness moment to be like really full on in that moment unto itself. And then we can move into the exploration. Then we can move into the guidance. Then we can move into other ways of approaching it and help shift those patterns. And that takes some time sometimes, you know, but we're certainly more effective when we can do that work to detangle ourselves or decouple the idea of wrongness from the behavior. But to get that feeling of the no wrongness, like actually to make it visceral, to feel it, to actually see the kid in that moment that way is a whole other thing. It's hard. It's challenging. And that takes some work. And it's worthwhile work. Because in a way, what happens when we do that is we're also like chipping away at our own wrongness, right? And that is something that sometimes we don't want to let go of our wrongness. It feels like we're letting ourselves off the hook sometimes with that sense of no wrongness, you know? And I think the other thing about no wrongness is we equate wrongness with accountability unconsciously. We connect wrongness with accountability. And we think, well, if there's no wrongness, then I'm not teaching my kid to be accountable for when they do these things. But again, this is another reframing, because real accountability doesn't come from wrongness. It comes from love. It comes from caring about other people's experience and wanting, caring about my impact, right? It's not about only knowing that there's pain from my impact. It's about caring that there's pain from my impact. And there's a big difference between the two. And a lot of the time when we tell kids that there's that pain in their, from their impact, we're not helping them to care about it. In fact, we're doing the opposite. And so this is the other part of it, is we can help kids learn to care about their impact, but it starts with them knowing that when we're doing that with them, there's no wrongness as part of it. This is a bit of a journey. It's a bit of a relationship shift. It's a bit of a mindset shift. But once we can get clear on it, it is quite a radical thing. It's quite a effective thing.
That's it, everybody. Thank you very much. If you'd like to work with Sujai and I personally on a weekly basis, you can come join us at our membership site. We do weekly meditations and group coaching calls and live classes, and it's a really great space and a great community. And you can find us at gentleparentsunite.com. And if you want to find more of my articles and videos, you can follow me on my social media at Meaningful Ideas on Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, where I have over 80 videos. And would love to see you there. And that's it, everyone. See you next week.